2. Trust me, we know. The rest of the meeting continues without a hiccup, although it's difficult to ignore the death stares coming from Abigail and Jules' direction. Then Charlotte dismisses us with the clap of her manicured hands. Chairs are scraped back and everyone disperses. I bump into someone during the stampede, stepping away quickly when I realize it's Rebecca Locke. Oh, sorry, I tell the petite girl. Didn't see you there. It's fine, she replies in a tight voice, and then darts off without another word. As I watch her hurry upstairs, I sigh and wonder if things will ever get any less awkward between me and Rebecca. I was forced to kiss her during pledge week, and needless to say, it was a mortifying experience for the both of us. We've spoken only a handful of times since and never been alone in the same room together. Wanna get some lunch? Sasha links her arm through mine as we head for the front door. Sure, I reply. Taylor, wait! Someone calls before we can leave the house. I glance over my shoulder. Lisa Donaldson and Olivia Ling are sashaying toward us. What's up? I say politely. You live in Hastings, right? Lisa runs a hand through her glossy mane of hair. Yeah, why? I ask, and then stand there trying to hide my shock as two chicks who've never given me the time of day explain how they're in Hastings once or twice a week for their salon appointments and would love to grab a bite with me if I'm free Tuesday night. And you too, Sasha, Olivia offers in what sounds like a genuine invitation. Usually Beth and Robin and the boyfriends meet us at the diner too. It's nice to leave campus and get a change of scenery sometimes, you know? Even nicer to live off campus, I say with a grin. I bet, murmurs Lisa. Her gaze flicks toward Abigail, who's whispering furiously with Jules in the far corner of the living room. Interesting. Maybe I'm not the only one considering voting for Danny. After agreeing to meet the girls on Tuesday, Sasha and I exit the house. Outside, I breathe in the early spring air, release a gust of it in a slow rush. Connor fucking Edwards, I mumble. Sasha laughs softly. The man's good. I'll give him that. Too good. He even had me convinced he missed me, and I know that's not true. Hell, he had every Kappa in that room salivating over him. One FaceTime from him, and suddenly they're inviting me to dinner. Connor had told me how much he loves games. Well, today he proved he's highly skilled at them, too. Problem is, I'm terrible at games. I always lose. And the longer this silly ruse with Connor goes on, the greater the danger of it all blowing up in my face.
9. Connor. There's an eerie calm on the ice Tuesday morning as the team runs through drills. Hardly anyone says a word for 2 hours. Only the sounds of our skates and coach's whistle echo through the empty arena. The tournament brackets were announced yesterday. This weekend we face Minnesota Duluth in Buffalo, New York. No one wants to say it, but I think the matchup has everyone a bit spooked. The nerves are creeping in. We're all on edge and hyper-focused on our individual parts of the machine. Hunter's been staying late every day since we made the playoffs. He wants it bad. I think he sees it as a reflection on his success as captain, like it's his job alone to win this for us, and if he doesn't, he's a failure. Man, I could never do his job. I generally make it a rule to minimize expectations and not take on responsibility for anyone but myself. After practice, we hit the showers. I stand under the spray and let the scalding water beat down on my aching shoulders. This tournament might just be the death of me. My old team in LA sucked, which means we never had to worry about a postseason. Going this long, at this high a competitive level, is taking its toll on my body. Bruises, sore ribs, tired muscles. I honestly don't know how professionals do it. If I'm even able to stand up on skates next season, it'll be a miracle. There are a lot of guys who think they want to go pro. Less than half have a legitimate shot. Me, I've never harbored any delusions that I'm NHL material, nor do I want to be. Hockey has always just been a hobby, something to keep me out of trouble. Idle hands and all that. Soon, this part of my life will be over. Problem is, I don't have any idea what comes next.
Hey, Captain, I move to call the Relationship Status Inquisition into session.
Bucky shouts out above the noise of the showers. I second that motion, Jesse calls back. The motion carries. Hunter stands in the stall beside me. I feel him staring at the side of my face.
This session of the Relationship Status Inquisition is now open. Bucky, call your first witness.
I call Joe Foster to the stand.
Present, Foster gurgles out under the spray of his shower faucet at the opposite end of the room. I fucking hate you guys, I say as I grab a towel and wrap it around my waist.
Is it true, Mr. Foster, that Connor Edwards did publicly and embarrassingly drop to his knees to profess his love to Kappa Party Girl after he was known to have hooked up with Instagram Natalie?
Wait, what? Foster asked blankly. Oh, at the banquet thing. Yeah, it was fucking gross.
And did he subsequently bring Kappa Party Girl home that evening?
Yo, Bucky, I didn't know you could use four-syllable words, Gavin says, ribbing him as they leave the showers. I head to my locker to get dressed, the guys breathing down my neck.
Yeah, they spent a long time in his bedroom, alone.
Foster's going to find his car stuffed full of dildos sometime in the very near future. And they FaceTimed the other day? Matt pipes up, a big stupid grin on his face. He called her. A round of mock gasps travels through the room. Guess Matt can look forward to some dildos too.
You can all eat shit, I drawl.
I seem to remember, Hunter says, you conspiring to interfere in my dick affairs. Payback's a bitch. At least I don't need you to make out with my girlfriend to get me to fuck her.
Ouch, Bucky laughs. He's got you there, Cap.
So this is a real thing? Hunter asks, unfazed by my jab at his stupid chastity bargain. You and Taylor. And yeah, sort of.
Sort of?
No, it isn't real, technically, and it kind of sucks lying to the guys. But also, what makes it not real? I mean, I'm not going to sleep with other women or date because that wouldn't be respectful to either Taylor or those potential women. She hasn't said as much out loud, but I suspect she feels the same way on the subject. So that checks the monogamy box. And okay, yeah, we're not screwing or kissing or touching at all, but that doesn't mean I'm opposed to those things. I think if I could make Taylor see herself the way I do, make her appreciate her body the way I do, fuck do I appreciate it, then maybe she'll loosen up a little and be open to the screwing and kissing and touching part. So that checks the attraction box. Truth is, Taylor's fun to hang out with, and I like talking to her. She's unpretentious and kinda hilarious. Best of all, she doesn't expect anything from me. I don't have to be some version of me that she's concocted in her head, or meet some wild expectations that only wind up disappointing both of us. And she doesn't judge. Not once has she made me feel like she looks down on me, or is embarrassed by my choices or reputation. I don't need her to approve, just accept. And I get the sense that she likes me for me. Worst case, I get a good friend out of the deal. Best case, I screw her brains out. Win-win, either way. It is what it is, I say, pulling a hoodie over my head. We're having fun. Fortunately, the guys drop it, mostly because they have the attention span of fruit flies. Hunter's already texting Demi on his way out the door, while Matt and Foster start discussing the squid movie we all watched the other night. On my way out of the hockey facility, my phone rings. Mom flashes on the screen. Go on ahead, I tell Matt. I'll be right there. As my teammate ambles off toward the parking lot, I slow my gait and answer the call. Hey, Mom.
Hey, mister,
Mom says. No matter how old I get, it's like I'm still 5 in her eyes. I haven't heard from you in ages. Everything okay out there in the tundra? I chuckle. Sun's actually out today, if you can believe it. I don't mention that the temperature is only 50 degrees, and it's the end of frickin' March. Spring has taken its sweet-ass time getting to New England. That's good. I was worried you'd finish your first East Coast winter with a vitamin D deficiency.
Nope, all good here. What about you? What's happening with the fires?
Wildfires have been wreaking havoc on the West Coast for the past few weeks. It's been making me antsy knowing my mom's out there breathing in all that crap. Oh, well, you know. Last couple weeks I've been putting up plastic and taping the doors and windows shut to keep the smoke out. Bought 4 brand new air purifiers that are supposed to suck up anything bigger than an atom. I think they're drying out my skin, though. But maybe it's just the lack of humidity lately. Anyhow, the fires down this way are out now, they said, so the smoke's mostly cleared. Which is good, because I just started a new Sunrise Beach yoga class.
Yoga, Mom?
Oh, God, I know, right? She laughs at herself. It's an infectious sound I hadn't realized I'd missed so much. But Christian's partner, Richie, you remember Christian from across the street? He just started teaching the class. He invited me, and I didn't know how to tell him no, so...
So now you're a yoga lady.
I know, right? Who would have thunk it?
Certainly not me. Mom used to spend 60, 70 hours a week on her feet in a salon, then come home to chase my ass all over the neighborhood. If someone had invited her to Sunrise Beach yoga back then, she probably would have punched them in the throat. Making the transition from L.A. working single mother to HBC housewife was a tough one for her. She spent a lot of energy trying to fit in with a certain idea of herself and then resenting the inadequacy as a result, at least until she figured out how to stop giving a shit. People who say money doesn't buy happiness aren't using it right. But hey, if Mom's at the point where she can take some joy in waking up at the crack of dawn for frivolous shit, I'm happy for her.
I told Max if he starts seeing goop charges on the credit card statements to stage an intervention.
How is Max? Not that I care, but it makes Mom feel better when I act like I give a shit. In my defense, I'm certain my stepdad only asks her about me for the same reason, to score points. Max tolerates me because he loves my mom, but he's never bothered trying to get to know me. Dude's kept his distance from day one. I suspect he was relieved when I told them I wanted to transfer to an East Coast school. He was so happy to get rid of me, he pulled every string possible to get me into Briar. And I was equally relieved to go. Guilt has a way of pressing down on you until you'll do anything to escape.
He's terrific. Out of town for work right now, but he gets back Friday morning. So we'll both be cheering you on in spirit Friday night. Any chance the game will be televised?
Probably not, I reply as I near the parking lot. If we make it to the final tournament, then for sure. Anyway, Mom, I gotta go. Just finished practice and need to drive home.
Okay, sweetie. Text or call before you leave for Buffalo this weekend.
Will do. We say goodbye and I hang up and approach the beat-up black Jeep I share with Matt. Technically, it's mine, but he chips in for gas and pays for the oil changes, which means I don't need to dip into the account Max tops up for me every month. I hate being dependent on my stepfather, but at the moment, I have no choice. Everything okay? Matt asks when I hop into the passenger seat. Yeah, sorry, was talking to my mom. He looks disappointed. What? I narrow my eyes. I was hoping you'd say it was your new girl, and then I could make fun of you some more. But moms are off limits. I snicker. Since when? You mock Bucky about banging his mother practically on a daily basis. Although speaking of my new girl, I haven't heard from her since last night when she replied LOL to a hilarious video I sent her. Just an LOL. To a video of a surfing chihuahua. What the hell? As Matt pulls out of the parking lot, I shoot a quick text off to Taylor. Me. What you doing, hot stuff? She doesn't respond for nearly 30 minutes.
I'm home and in my kitchen making a smoothie when she finally gets back to me. Taylor. Working? I've got co-op at Hastings Elementary.
Right. She mentioned she was serving as a teacher's aide as part of her degree requirement.
Me. Dinner later?
Her.
Can't.
Sad face.
Her. Have plans with friends at the diner. Talk later?
Well, shit. Been a while since anyone turned down a date with me, and even that was only so she could get me into bed faster. Taylor's rejection hurts more than I know what to do with, but I'm very good at pretending not to care about stuff. Fake it till you make it, right?
Me.
Sure thing.
10. Taylor. I'm neck deep in construction paper butterflies and pipe cleaner caterpillars when the end of day bell rings. The kids drop their scissors and glue sticks to run for their cubbies where their backpacks and coats are kept. Not so fast, I remind them. Come put your supplies away and hang up your projects to dry. Miss Marsh? One of the girls taps me on the arm. I can't find my shoe. She stands forlorn in one purple waterproof boot and one cartoon character sock. When's the last time you had your shoe, Katie? She shrugs. Did you and Tamara trade shoes again? Another shrug, this one with some bottom lip protruding and eyes cast down at her mismatched feet. I swallow a sigh. Go find Tamara and see where she left your shoe. Katie scurries off. I watch her progress while picking up scraps of paper and pushing desks back into their proper arrangement. With Tamara's guidance, who herself isn't wearing any shoes, they find the missing footwear in the reading corner with the costumes Mrs. Gardner uses to have the kids act out characters while they read aloud. The thing about first graders, they lie as easy as breathing. They're just not very good at it yet. That, and it's damn near impossible to keep all their clothes on them. Half my job is just making sure we send them home wearing only what they arrived in. Yep, it is a thankless and unending battle against the lost and found box. If there was such a thing as footlice, Mrs. Gardner says as we see the last stragglers off, this classroom would be quarantined by the CDC. I grin. At least it's still cold enough outside that they're wearing socks. I hate to see what happens when it gets warmer. She heaves a defeated breath. That's why I keep antifungal spray in my desk. There's a lovely thought. Hastings Elementary is just a 10-minute walk from my 3-story apartment building. There aren't any high-rises in Hastings, only little buildings and shops and residential streets lined with townhouses or rambling old Victorians. It's a cute town, and everything is in walking distance, which I appreciate because I don't own a car. I let myself into my tiny studio and grab a granola bar from the cupboard. As I munch on it, I text Sasha with my free hand. Me. I don't need to dress up for dinner or anything, right? I've never actually gone out with Lisa and those girls, so I have no idea what to expect. But we're only meeting at the diner, so really, how fancy can it be? Sasha. Dress up? I'm not. Jeans plus tank plus leather jacket plus boots equals me. Me. Okay, good. I'm keeping it cash, too. Her. You bringing C? Tongue sticking out emoji. Me. Why would I be bringing C? Her. Lisa said BFs were welcome. Me. Ha ha. Sasha knows damn well that Connor isn't really my boyfriend, but she's getting a kick out of teasing me about it. Or maybe she thinks if she refers to him as my boyfriend enough times, then it'll magically transform from pretend to real. Poor naive Sasha. I have no doubt Connor will get bored soon, which means the charade can't last much longer. A shame, really, because our supposed love affair continues to piss the hell out of Abigail. Last night, at a mandatory house dinner, Abigail's boyfriend wouldn't let up on all the jock cock I was gobbling while blatantly staring at my tits. During dessert, he remarked that I looked like Marilyn Monroe, only extra curvy. At which point, Sasha asked him what it's like living life with a micropenis. Abigail, meanwhile, kept scratching at the side of her neck every time Connor's name came up until her skin was red and raw and flaking off her. Is it possible to contract jealousy hives? Of course, such pettiness would be entirely beneath me. Entirely. Me. You don't think Lisa invited Abigail, do you? Sasha. God, I hope not. I don't have the patience for two dinners in a row with that witch. If she's there, we turn around and walk right out. Deal? Me. Deal. Luckily, when Sasha and I walk into the diner later that night, Abigail and her douchebag boyfriend Kevin are nowhere to be seen. Lisa brought her boyfriend Corey, though, and Robin's sitting with some guy who introduces himself as Shep. Olivia came solo, and I end up seated next to her with Sasha on my other side. I get barely a bite into my BLT before the girls start in on me. Okay, but like, how is he in the sack? Lisa asks, thoroughly ignoring her boyfriend's uneasy squirm. Clearly, he'd rather be anywhere else than smack in the middle of Connor Edwards' exploits. You and me both, brother. How big is he? Olivia demands. Is he circumcised? Grower or shower? Could we not? Sasha says, dangling a chicken finger in the air. I don't want to hear about dicks while I'm eating.
Thank you,
mumbles Corey. Fine, but is he a good kisser? Olivia has her phone out, openly salivating at Connor's Instagram. The boyfriends have, at this point, been reduced to chewing their burgers in emasculated silence. He looks like he'd be a good kisser, not too much mouth. What does too much mouth even mean? I ask with a laugh. You know, when they're like trying to swallow your lips. I don't want to feel any part of the kiss on my chin. Olivia plants her elbows on the table, a fork in one fist. Spill it, Taylor. I want filthy details. His kissing is a mystery, unascertained. None of my business. Apt. Apt, she says. Sasha shakes her head, smirking. Only you would call kissing apt. I don't know. It's kissing. I shrug awkwardly. How much is there to say on the topic? Nothing, in fact, when I'm working on entirely fabricated experience. Not that the idea doesn't hold some appeal. Connor is incredibly attractive, and he has really, really nice lips. Full in a masculine way. He seems like the kind of guy who treats kissing as its own pursuit rather than a means to an end. To be fair, I haven't kissed many people, only four to be exact, and three of those four were terrible experiences. Junior year of high school was my first kiss, and we both sucked at it. Way too much tongue. We made out a few times after, but it didn't get any better. Then came freshman year of college, when I was pressured into kissing Rebecca during pledge week, and sophomore year, when I accidentally kissed Abigail's boyfriend on a dare. My fourth go at kissing wasn't awful. Not earth-shattering either, but at least it didn't include buckets of saliva or forced contact. I dated a guy named Andrew for 4 months, and he was a decent kisser. We never went further than dry humping, though, which is probably why we broke up. He claimed it was because I couldn't open up to him, and I suppose that played a part in it too, but we both knew the no-sex part wasn't cutting it for him. I didn't feel comfortable doing it with him. Sometimes I wonder if I'll ever meet a guy who makes me feel secure enough to take all my clothes off in front of him. Oh my God. Olivia all but dives under the table. Beside her, Lisa chokes on her soda and begins hacking up a lung. I turn around to see what's got them in such a fit. Connor fucking Edwards. Why am I not surprised? I feel like he's got spidey senses that alert him whenever chicks are discussing his penis. All 6 feet and 2 inches of him comes striding through the diner toward our table. He's in his black and silver Breyer hockey jacket and a pair of dark blue jeans that hug his long legs. Steely gray eyes sparkle with mischief as he combs one hand through his long blonde hair. When his gaze lands on me, the excitement in his full, broad smile does a number on my head and my pulse. Oh, Lord. Men shouldn't get to be so pretty.
Babe, I missed you.
Connor snatches me up from my chair and wraps me in his arms. He smells so good. I don't know what kind of products he uses, but he always smells vaguely of the ocean. And coconut. I love coconut. What are you doing here? I whisper.
Having dinner with my girlfriend.
he says with a sly smirk that suggests he's up to no good.
She tries to keep me locked up in her bedroom all day,
Connor tells the table,
but I thought it'd be fun to meet her friends.
For one terrifying moment, I think he's leaning in to kiss me, and I lick my lips and inhale slowly, my entire body braced and rigid. Instead, he presses the lightest touch of his lips to the tip of my nose. In the aftermath, I don't know whether I'm disappointed or relieved.
So this happened fast.
Olivia makes room for Connor to pull up a chair and sit between me and her. I don't miss the way her hungry gaze follows his every movement.
Did you two know each other before the party? Lisa asks.
Her eyes aren't as ravenous, probably as not to humiliate her boyfriend any further, but she's as focused on Connor as Olivia is.
No, we didn't, I answer for him. We met for the first time that night.
She blew my mind.
Connor puts his arm around my shoulders, drawing tiny patterns with his fingertips.
Time is relative.
Just to fuck with him, I place my hand on his thigh and tell the group, he's already trying to convince me to let him move in with me. But my fuckery attempt backfires. First off, his thigh is rock hard beneath my palm. Second, well, I can't think of a second thing right now because my hand is on Connor Edwards' thigh. Before I can snatch my hand away, Connor covers my knuckles with one big palm, effectively trapping me there. The warmth of his touch has me fighting a hot shiver.
Obviously, my girl thinks it's too soon, he says solemnly. But I disagree. It's never too soon to show how committed you are, right?
He directs this to the boyfriends, who each blurt out cliches in a mad scramble to avoid winding up in the doghouse.
Yeah, if it's meant to be, it's meant to be, says Corey. When you know, you know,
agrees Shep. Sasha snorts loudly, then takes a sip of her soda. Connor loves commitment, I explain. He's been planning his wedding since he was a little boy. Right, babe?
Right.
He sharply pinches my thumb, but his expression is all innocence. He even has one of those, what do you call it, Con? A love board?
It's just a Pinterest account, babe.
He glances around the table.
How am I going to know what kind of wedding reception centerpieces I like if I don't have some options to choose from? Am I right?
Olivia, Lisa, and Robin all but rip off their panties and throw them at Connor's beautiful head. Sasha, meanwhile, looks like she's struggling not to laugh.
You getting married, Con?
A new voice drawls.
What? Did my invite get lost in the mail?
I look over to see a stunning woman in all black sauntering up to the table. She lightly bumps Connor's shoulder with her hip, a wry smile playing on her full red lips. This chick is drop-dead gorgeous. Dark hair, dark eyes, those vixen lips, and she's rocking the kind of perfect body I can only dream of. Slender waist, long limbs, and perfectly proportioned breasts. Immediately, I feel self-conscious in my leggings and loose white sweater. I tend to wear oversized shirts that fall off one shoulder because they hide the curves beneath them but still show off a bit of skin. Bare shoulders are the safe kind of skin. The rest stays hidden.
Sorry, Bren. You're not invited.
Connor draws back.
You're too much trouble.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I'm the one who's trouble.
Her gaze flicks down to mine and Connor's joined hands before locking onto my face.
And you are?
Taylor. Connor answers easily, and I'm glad he does because my vocal cords have frozen. And who are you? I want to demand. I mean, I assume she's an ex of his, or at the very least a former lover, and the envy that coats my throat makes it difficult to maintain a neutral expression. Of course, this is the kind of woman Connor would be attracted to. She's perfection.
Babe, this is Brenna,
Connor introduces.
She's my coach's daughter.
Even worse. Now I've got porn scenarios about forbidden love flashing through my head. The coach's daughter and the hunky star player. She blows him in the locker room and then they have sex on daddy's desk. Wait, I know you. Brenna Jensen. You're going out with Jake Connolly, Lisa suddenly blurts out. The dark-haired goddess narrows her eyes.
Yeah, so?
So that's... You're so lucky, breathes Lisa. Jake Connolly is...
Is what?
her boyfriend Corey demands, his tone revealing he's officially fed up with the way his girl has been acting all night.
Finish that sentence, Lisa. He's what?
I think Lisa knows she's pushed him too far because she backpedals as if it's an Olympic event. He's one of the best players in the NHL, she finishes.
One of? Brenna mocks. No, honey. He's the best.
Connor chuckles softly.
What you doing here, B?
Picking up dinner for Dad and me. He can't cook for shit, and I'm tired of eating burnt food every time I visit him. Speaking of food, her gaze shifts to the counter where one of the waitresses at the cash is signaling Brenna.
Enjoy the rest of your night, Con. Try not to elope without telling your coach beforehand.
Everyone watches her go, and this time it's Corey and Shep whose eyes are glazing over. Brenna is sex personified. She walks with such hip-swaying confidence that I'm once again swimming with envy, even knowing she has a boyfriend and therefore no threat to my fake relationship. Hey, Lisa chides, smacking Corey's arm.
Payback's a bitch, ain't it?
He murmurs, his attention still fixed on Brenna Jensen's ass. Sasha grins at our sorority sister.
He's got you there, Lisa.
So, back to Connor's wedding board on Pinterest, Olivia announces.
Nah,
Connor says.
Those pics are just for Taylor. Although, we might need to add some dress samples for inspiration. Eh, baby?
I swallow a laugh. Definitely, baby. Is this? Olivia's gaze darts between us. Getting serious? Connor looks at me. I expect his usual giddy mischief and mirth, and it's certainly there, but this time, there's something else, too. A passing intensity in the crease of his forehead and straight line of his lips.
It's getting there,
he tells Olivia, but his gaze doesn't leave mine. 11. Taylor. Dinner at the diner turns into drinks at Malone's, the sports bar in town. Connor invites some of the guys from the team to join us. Likewise, some of my other Kappa sisters show up. In the back room near the pool tables and dartboards, we push a few tables together to accommodate our expanding party. While Connor's teammates have playoffs to worry about and are keeping their alcohol consumption to a minimum, the girls have no such restrictions. My fellow Kappas have become emboldened by their hormones and are well on their way to getting loaded, except for Rebecca, who ordered a Diet Coke. She's a few seats away and hasn't looked my way once. I was surprised she even came out tonight, but I suspect she hadn't known I was here when Lisa invited her. Since pledge week, she's basically run the other way anytime she saw me coming.
You're not mad, are you?
Connor sits down beside me with our drinks that he just got from the bar. There's some trepidation in his eyes, like maybe he's just realized that crashing dinner and inviting himself to drinks is more invasive than charming. Not mad, no. I eye him over the rim of my drink. Curious, though.
Oh?
A hint of his trademark playful smile resurfaces.
About?
What prompted you to hunt me down and subject yourself to the rabid, hungry gaze of my sorority sisters? Surely you have better things to do.
We've got to keep up appearances, right?
He's trying to play it cute, flashing his cheeky grin and flirtatious charms, but I'm not buying it this time. Something's up with him. There's a tension in his demeanor that doesn't suit him. I'm serious, I insist. I want a real answer. We're interrupted by a loud bang on the table, courtesy of my sorority sister Beth Bradley, who showed up only 30 minutes ago and is already tipsier than everyone else. We should play Dare or Dare, she announces, smacking the table until she's gotten everyone's attention. She raises an eyebrow at me, biting her lip impishly. While Lisa and Olivia don't seem to be Abigail fangirls, I know Beth is somewhat chummy with her, which means I'm instantly on guard. We should get a new game, I answer dryly.
What's Dare or Dare?
Across the table, Foster has just committed the cardinal sin of volunteering himself. Poor dumb bastard. Well, Beth says, I challenge you to a dare, and you must complete it upon penalty of death. The other guys snicker.
Sounds intense,
remarks Matt. You don't know the half of it, I tell him. I can't help but glance in Rebecca's direction, a tiny lump rising in my throat. Whatever potential friendship we might have had was just another casualty of this stupid game. Here, Sasha shoves a shot in front of me. She's just returned from her own trip to the bar, sandwiching herself between me and Matt. The two of them have looked pretty darn cozy all night. I eye the shot glass warily. Drinking this would be a terrible idea. One, I don't shoot liquor well, and two, where Connor's concerned, I've got to keep my wits about me. There are traps and pitfalls everywhere, holes full of sharpened bamboo spears waiting to impale me. Go on, Sasha urges. It'll take the edge off. So I knock it back. It tastes like cinnamon gum and licorice, and not in a good way.
I just wanted to see you,
Connor murmurs in my ear, continuing our conversation as if it had never stopped. The combination of liquor heating my blood and his warm breath on my neck makes my head go a bit fuzzy. I lean closer, my arm draped over his thigh to keep myself steady. Why? I murmur back. This time, the conversation does stop. His attention has been diverted to his teammate, who is foolishly calling Beth's bluff.
Go on, then,
Foster says.
Give me your best shot.
Careful,
Connor warns.
I've seen their handiwork.
Oh, no. Don't dare me to sleep with a cute blonde,
Foster deadpans.
That'd be the worst thing ever.
All right. Beth sits up straight, narrowing her eyes at him. I dare you to get any woman in this bar to take a shot out of your waistband. Connor and the guys burst out laughing.
Oh shit, dude. Let me FaceTime Gavin for this one.
Matt yanks out his phone, his muscular arm sliding off Sasha's shoulder.
Yeah, cool.
Foster jumps to his feet while Lisa goes to order the necessary shot.
How about it, Beth? You thirsty?
Nuh-uh. Can't make it that easy. Better start hunting, big boy. You've got 5 minutes or face the consequences. As soon as Lisa's back with the shot, Foster's on the prowl. He starts by scanning the room for groups of girls who don't look like they have any hostile meathead boyfriends to worry about. Matt and Bucky hop out of their chairs and follow him for moral support and to record his conquest. Tick-tock, Olivia taunts him as we all watch his progress. Better hurry. In short order, Foster's got a redhead on her knees. I watch with wide, impressed eyes as the girl takes the shot and pops up with a cherry between her lips. Chick's got moves. A few seconds later, Foster saunters back to our table with a dumb grin and his chest puffed out.
Too easy,
he says, then chugs his beer.
My turn now. Beth.
She smirks up at him. Give me your best shot. Foster and his teammates have a conference before daring Beth to make out with a girl of her choice while the two girls trade bras. Without the slightest hesitation, Beth enlists Olivia, who, as I'm discovering tonight, possesses a wild streak as well as a pretty decent sense of humor. I don't know why we never hung out before. Not wasting any time, the two Kappas stand up and lock lips while each tucks their arms into their shirts to undo their bras and pull them out of their sleeves, then put on the new one. It happens so fast, the men are left speechless and gawking.
What just happened?
Corey asks stupidly.
That's some kind of witchcraft right there,
Connor remarks beside me. I make the mistake of looking at Rebecca again, and this time she actually looks back. What ensues is the most awkward eye-locking in the history of mankind. I break visual contact when I hear someone say, Taylor? Huh? I turn at the sound of my name. Olivia is fluttering her fingers together like a cartoon villain. It's your turn. I dare you to... Oh, right. That's why we don't hang out. Because anyone who knows me well and whom I consider a friend wouldn't put me on the spot like this. Sasha must read the panic on my face. Oh, come on. Hasn't Taylor done enough? I think she's earned her retirement. To give Connor a lap dance, Olivia finishes gleefully. Fuck my life. Connor stiffens. His eyes meet mine, and although his expression reveals nothing, I can feel his concern. We haven't known each other long, but he's perceptive enough to know I'd rather accept the penalty of death than accept this embarrassing dare.
Hell no,
he declares, jumping to his feet.
I don't want a bunch of drunk perverts eyeing my girlfriend.
To my shock, he peels out of his hoodie. Now he's left in a tight white tank top that shows off his sculpted arms and washboard abs. Olivia audibly gasps. He cocks his head suddenly, a slow grin spreading across his face.
Nice. Even got the music on my side,
he drawls. Then he pulls my chair back a bit and stands between me and the table. What are you doing? I yelp.
Blowing your mind.
He winks at me. Dread fills my stomach when I recognize the song blasting from the bar's sound system. Pour Some Sugar on Me by Def Leppard. Oh, fuck me. Don't, I beg Connor, fear trembling in my voice. Please don't. Rather than heed my pleas, he licks his lips, sways his hips, and launches into a raunchy performance. Oh, my fucking God. My fake boyfriend is giving me a real lap dance. Work it, baby! Beth catcalls, while Olivia and the other girls transform into the living personification of the heart eyes emoji. When I try to cover my eyes, he pulls my hands away and runs them down his abs. Then he presses them against his ass as he gyrates and undulates in front of me to cheers and whistles as the entire bar stops to watch. As mortifying as the attention is, Connor is weirdly good at this. And after the initial terror subsides, it becomes pretty hilarious the way he's playing more goofy than sexy. I find myself laughing along with everyone else as Foster and Bucky start shouting out the chorus of the song. It's all fun and games until it isn't, because then I blink and the humor on Connor's handsome face turns into something headier. Heavy-lidded gray eyes fixed on me, he bends slightly and thrusts one hand through my hair. Long fingers tangle in the thick strands. Time stops. He's not dancing anymore. Not moving. Except he is moving. He's closing in on me, and I know what he's about to do. He's going to kiss me. He's going to kiss me here, in front of everyone at Malone's? No fucking way. He said he likes games, but this one has gotten out of hand. Before he can press his lips to mine, I launch out of my chair so fast he nearly falls to the floor. I catch only a second of his bewildered look before I run off toward the back corridor. The door there leads out to the alley next to the parking lot, and I stumble into it, relieved to find it empty. Heart pounding like crazy, I lean against the brick wall behind Malone's and peel out of my sweater to let the frigid air rush over my skin. My breath comes out as plumes of white, but sweat continues to bead across my chest. It's barely above freezing, yet in only a camisole, I'm still burning up.
Taylor!
The door flies open.
Taylor, you out here?
I don't say a word, hiding in the building's shadow. I just want him to go away.
Fuck, there you are.
Connor appears in front of me with worry etched on his perfect face.
What's wrong? What happened?
Why would you do that? I mutter, staring at the ground.
What? I don't understand.
He reaches for me and I step out of his grasp.
What did I do wrong? Just tell me so I can fix it.
I can't do this. I don't want to be a game to you anymore.
You're not a game,
he protests. Bullshit. You told me you were bored and that you love games. That's the reason you changed your stupid My Bri status and showed up at the diner tonight. This is some weird form of entertainment for you. I shake my head. Well, I'm not entertained anymore.
Taylor.
I'm sorry. I know this is my fault, and I pulled you into it at the Kappa party, but I'm done. The game's over. I try to get around him, but he blocks my path. Connor, move.
No.
Please, just move. You don't have to pretend to be into me anymore.
No.
He repeats.
Listen to me. You're not a game. I mean, Yeah, I did think it would be fun to fuck with your sorority sisters and talk about wedding vision boards and all that crazy shit, but I'm not pretending to be into you. I told you the night we met how hot I think you are.
I say nothing, avoiding his eyes.
I didn't come out tonight because of who's watching. I came because I was sitting at home thinking about you, and I couldn't stand it another minute.
I slowly lift my head. Bullshit, I accuse again.
Honest to God, truth. I like being around you. I like talking to you.
Then why do something so stupid and screw it all up by trying to kiss me?
Because I wanted to know what it felt like to kiss you, and I was afraid we might never find out.
The corner of his mouth quirks up.
Figured if I tried it in public, I had a better shot, because then you might kiss me back for appearances.
That's a dumb reason.
I know.
Tentatively, he takes a step toward me. This time, when he reaches out to take my hand in his, I let him.
I thought I was helping just now,
he says sheepishly.
I thought I was protecting you from having to do that ridiculous dare and we were having a laugh. I read it wrong, and I'm sorry for that.
His voice thickens.
But I know I'm not reading this wrong.
His thumb rubs the inside of my palm and I gulp.
You like me.
Ugh. This was all so simple just a few days ago, wasn't it? A little gag between friends. Now we've crossed over and there's no going back. We don't get to pretend the sexual tension is a joke, that the casual flirting doesn't mean anything, that someone isn't going to get hurt. In this case, someone means me. I don't know where to go from here, I start awkwardly, except that maybe it'd be better if we didn't hang out anymore.
No.
No?
Yeah, I veto that suggestion.
You don't get a veto. If I say I don't want to hang out with you anymore, then tough shit. That's the way it is.
I think you should let me kiss you.
Because you were probably dropped on your head as a child, I snap back. At that, Connor cracks a smile. He lets out a breath and squeezes my hand, then places it against his chest. Beneath my palm, his heart is pounding hard.
I think there's something here.
There's a note of challenge in his voice.
And I think you're afraid to find out what it is. Not sure why, though. Maybe you don't think you deserve it. I don't know. But that's a fucking tragedy because you, of all people, deserve to be happy. So here it is. I'm going to kiss you unless you tell me not to. Okay?
I'm going to regret this. Even as I lick my lips and tilt my head, I know I'm going to regret this. But the word no refuses to exit my mouth. Okay, I finally whisper. He takes full advantage of my acquiescence, leaning in to brush his lips against mine. At first, it's the lightest of caresses, but it doesn't take long for his kiss to grow deep, urgent. When I weave my arms up his shoulders and comb my fingers into his hair, he makes the sexiest sound against my mouth, half groan, half sigh. I feel his entire body clench against mine. His hands go to my hips, fingers biting into my bare skin, and presses me against the wall until there's no light left between us. His mouth, so gentle yet hungry, the heat of his body and the feel of his muscles caging me. It's surreal, thrilling. As desire courses through my veins, I kiss him back desperately. I forget myself. I forget where we are and all the reasons we shouldn't do this.
You taste like cinnamon,
he mumbles, and then his tongue is exploring again, slicking over mine and summoning a moan from deep in my throat. I cling to him, completely and totally addicted to the feel of his mouth against mine. I drag my teeth over his bottom lip and feel rather than hear the groan vibrate in his chest. His hands slide up my ribs, pushing beneath my shirt until they're just beneath my breasts. I suddenly wish I didn't take off my sweater, that I had an extra layer of protection between my flesh and Connor's seductive touch.
You get me so hot, Taylor,
His lips find my neck, and then he's sucking on it, triggering a flurry of shivers. His lower body bumps mine, hips giving a slow, sensual thrust that makes me moan again. He kisses me again, his tongue teasing the seam of my lips. Then he pulls back, and I see the same needy, hungry lust I'm feeling reflected back at me in his eyes.
"Come home with me tonight,"
Connor fucking Edwards whispers. And that's what breaks the spell. Breathing hard, I drop my hands from his broad shoulders and let them dangle at my sides. Damn it. Damn it. What's wrong with me? I'm no clairvoyant, but I don't need to be one to see how all this is going to play out. I go back to his place. I lose my virginity to him. He rocks my world for one amazing night. And then, next week, I'm just another sad sap raising my hand along with his other conquests when asked who there has hooked up with him.
Taylor?
He's still watching me, waiting. I bite my lip. Easing away from the heat of his body, I slowly shake my head and say, "Will you drive me home?"
12. Connor. I can't get a read on Taylor. Outside the bar, I thought we had a connection. I might be a fucking idiot sometimes, but I know when a girl is kissing me back. She definitely felt something. But the moment we stopped, she shut down again, slammed a door in my face, and now I'm driving her home with the distinct impression she's mad at me again. I can't figure out what she wants from me. I'd leave her alone, stay out of her life if I believed that's what Taylor really wanted, but I don't think that's the case. "Did I make a mistake kissing you?" I asked, glancing over at the passenger side. She put her sweater back on, which is a damn shame. The silky top she had on before was hot as hell. My dick is still aching for her. She's silent for a long time, looking out the window like she can't get far enough away from me. Finally, she spares me a quick look and says, "It was a nice kiss." "Nice? Well, fuck me. That's the most lukewarm response to a kiss I've ever received, and I'm not sure it answers my question." "Then what's wrong?" I press. "It's just..." She lets out a sigh. "I mean, think about all those people at the bar looking at us." Frankly, I didn't even notice anyone else. When I'm with her, I'm only watching Taylor. Something about her reels me in, and it's not just the fact that my body is primed for her. Yes, I'd love to bang her brains out, but that's not the reason I showed up at the diner uninvited earlier. Taylor Marsh has no idea how cool she is, and that's a fucking shame. "I'm sorry if I embarrassed you," I say gruffly. "That wasn't my intention."
"No, I know. But come on, you have to know what people would say about someone like you with someone like me."
"I'm not sure what you mean."
"Damn it, Connor, don't act like it isn't obvious. I get it. You're trying to make me feel better, and that's sweet. But let's be real. People see us and they think, 'What is he doing with her? We're a punchline.'"
"Bullshit. I don't believe that."
"Oh my God. You heard it yourself at the banquet. You heard all the shit Abigail and her douche army were saying about us."
"So what? I don't give a shit what other people think. I don't live my life on the basis of other people's opinions or to please anyone but myself. If she'd just fucking let me, I'd like to try pleasing Taylor, too."
"Well, maybe you should. Because I can assure you, they're not thinking nice things about us."
There's ice in her voice that I've never heard from her before. Hatred, even. It's not directed at me, but I'm starting to get a sense of how deep her insecurities go. My next breath comes out ragged, frustrated. I'll keep saying this until it sinks in, but there's nothing wrong with you, Taylor. There isn't some arbitrary hierarchy between us. I want you. I've wanted you since the moment I watched you cross the room at that party. Her turquoise eyes widen slightly. "I mean it," I say. "I have 1,000 filthy thoughts about you a day.
That night in my room when you were running your fingers through my hair, I had half a hard-on just lying there. I pull up outside Taylor's apartment building and throw the Jeep in park. I angle my body so I'm facing her, but her eyes remain fixed forward. The frustration builds again. I get it. You have body issues. Whatever you've experienced in your life, it's made you hate the way you look and hide yourself in leggings and baggy sweaters. Finally, she turns her head. You have no idea what it's like to be me, she says flatly. I don't, but I think if you tried just a little to accept yourself, you might figure out that everyone else has their own insecurities too. And maybe you'll believe a guy when he tells you he's wildly attracted to you. I shrug. Wear whatever the hell you want, Taylor, but your body is incredible, and you should be able to flaunt it, not live your life in a paper bag. She abruptly rips off her seatbelt and grabs the door handle. Taylor, good night, Connor. Thanks for the ride. And she's gone, slamming the door. The fuck did I do? I want to hop out and run after her, but I recognize the internal voice that's urging me to do that. It's that voice in the back of my head where all my really dumb ideas come from. The self-destructive, self-deprecating jackass who takes anything good and easy and pure and just fucking starts tearing at it with his teeth. Truth is, Taylor doesn't actually know me at all. She has no idea the shithead I was back in LA or the shit I did to fit in. She has no idea that most of the time I still don't fit in, here, there, or anywhere at all. That for years I've been trying on masks until I've almost forgotten what I look like underneath, never satisfied with the result. I keep trying to convince Taylor to go easy on herself, appreciate her body and who she is, but I can't even convince myself. So what the hell am I doing getting wrapped up with a girl like her, a good person who doesn't need my bullshit when I haven't even gotten myself figured out? Sighing, I reach for the gear shift. Instead of running after Taylor, I drive home, and I tell myself it's for the best.
13. Taylor. I'm relieved when my mom drives in from Cambridge on Thursday to have lunch, after 2 days of dodging calls from Connor and questions from Sasha about what happened the other night. I need a distraction. We hit up the new vegan place in Hastings, partly because my mother grumbles at the idea of choking down another greasy meal at the diner, and mostly because eating carbs in front of her always gives me anxiety. I look like my mom's before image in the before and after shots of some European med spa commercial. Iris Marsh is tall, skinny, and utterly gorgeous. She'd given me hope during puberty that any day I'd wake up and look like her younger clone. I was 16 before it hit me that wasn't going to happen. Guess I only got my father's genes. How are your classes going? She asks, draping her coat over the back of her chair as we sit with our meals.
Are you enjoying your co-op?
Yeah, it's great. I definitely know elementary education is where I want to be. The kids are terrific. I shake my head in amazement. And they learn so fast. It's incredible to watch their development over such a short period of time. I always knew I wanted to be a teacher. Mom briefly tried to convince me to pursue a professor track like her, but that was a non-starter. The idea of getting up in front of a room full of college kids every day, being dissected under their scrutiny, I'd be breaking out in hives. No, with little kids, they're engineered to see teachers as authority figures first. If you treat them fairly and with kindness and compassion, they love you. Sure, there are always the brats and bullies, but at that age, kids aren't nearly as judgmental. What about you? I ask. How's work? Mom offers a wry smile.
We're almost through the worst of the Chernobyl effect. Unfortunately, it also means the research windfall has mostly dried up. Nice while it lasted, though.
I laugh in response. The HBO series was the best and worst thing to happen to Mom's nuclear science and engineering department at MIT since Fukushima. The The sudden popularity brought a renewed energy to anti-nuke demonstrators who started gathering near campus or outside conferences. It also meant the research grants came pouring in, along with every fanboy who thought he was going to save the world. Except then they realize there's a lot more money in robotics, automation, and aerospace engineering, and switch majors before their parents find out their tuition checks were feeding fantasies brought on by the guy who wrote Scary Movie 4. Good show, though. We've also finally filled Dr. Matsoukas' old position. We hired a young woman from Suriname who studied with Alexis at Michigan State. Dr. Alexis Branchot, or Aunt Alexis, as she was known when she used to stay with us during visiting lectures at MIT, is like Mom's evil French twin. The two of them, with a bottle of Bacardi 151, were a natural disaster. For a while, I wondered if maybe Aunt Alexis was the reason I rarely saw my mom date. It'll be the first time the department will be majority female. Nice. Smashing atoms and the patriarchy. And what about extracurriculars? I ask. She grins. You know, normal kids don't want to hear about their mother's sex lives. And whose fault is that? You have a point. It's big of you to say so. Honestly, she says, I've been swamped with work. The department is overhauling the curriculum for the master's thesis next year, and Dr. Rapp and I have been taking care of Dr. Matsoukas' advisees. Elaine set me up with her husband's racquetball partner last month, but I draw a hard line at middle-aged men who still bite their fingernails. I have a fake boyfriend. I don't know why I blurt that out. Probably low blood sugar. I didn't eat breakfast this morning and only had a bowl of grapes for dinner last night while I was studying for a quiz in diagnostic and corrective reading strategies. Okay. My mother looks justifiably baffled. Define fake boyfriend. Well, it started off as a dare, and then it sort of became a joke. Now we might not be friends anymore because I might have gotten mad at him for trying to like me for real, and I keep ignoring his text messages. Uh-huh, is her response. Her ocean blue eyes narrow in that way they do when she's evaluating a puzzle. My mom's always been brilliant, easily the smartest person I know. But when it comes to me, I've never felt like we were working off the same reading material.
Have you tried liking him back?
Definitely not. Okay, maybe that isn't true. I know if I let myself, I would absolutely develop feelings for Connor. I've been replaying our kiss over and over again in my head since the second he dropped me off at home. I could barely concentrate on studying last night because I can't stop thinking about the firmness of his lips, the heat of his body, the feel of his rock-hard cock pressing against my belly. There was no denying he'd wanted me that night. He asked me to go home with him because he wanted to fuck me, no doubt about it. But that's the problem. I know the minute I give in, Connor will wake up from this daydream to realize he should be with someone much hotter. I've seen the girls that guys on his team date. I'd stick out like a fat, sore thumb. I'm not interested in being the collateral damage once Connor figures that out.
Well, what did you fight about?
Mom asks curiously. It's not important. It's dumb that I even brought it up. I move my fork around the remnants of cauliflower rice in my bowl and try to psych myself up for finishing it. We've only known each other a few weeks anyway. I blame the punch bowl at the Kappa party. I should know better than to drink out of a 5-gallon paint bucket.
Yes,
she says, grinning. I should think I raised you better than that. As we're walking back to her car, though, something dislodges itself from the back of my mind. Mom?
Yeah?
Do you think I dress like a bag lady, have the fashion sense of a literary school marm, am doomed to live out my life as a spinster? Do you think the way I dress says I'm embarrassed by the way I look? She stops beside the car and meets my eyes with sympathy. Even with her more minimalist style, which has generally consisted of blacks, whites, and grays, she always looks so fashionable and put together. Easy, I guess, when clothes are designed for exactly your body type. It was always difficult growing up with a mom like her. Not that she didn't try. She was my consummate cheerleader and booster of self-esteem, constantly telling me how beautiful I was, how proud she was of me, how she wished she had hair as thick and lustrous as mine. But despite her efforts, I couldn't help comparing myself to her in a vicious cycle of self-defeat. I think your clothes say nothing about your intelligence, your kindness, your wit, and humor, Mom says tactfully. I think you ought to dress however you feel most comfortable. With that said, if you don't feel comfortable with the way you dress, perhaps that's a conversation you need to have with your heart rather than your closet. Well, that's one vote in the Bag Lady column from Mom. On the walk up to my apartment after saying bye to my mother, I decide to bite the bullet and text Connor. Me, you home? A ball of anxiety coils in my gut once I hit send. After ignoring him for 2 days, he'd have every right to have written me off by now. I was kind of a bitch the other night. I'm well aware of this. Despite his lack of social graces, Connor hadn't meant to offend me, and there was no reason to storm off the way I did. None, except that I was feeling insecure and vulnerable and generally sick of myself, so I took it out on him rather than explaining how I felt. The screen lights up. Connor.
Yeah?
Me. Coming over, okay? Connor.
Yeah.
Back-to-back yas aren't exactly promising, but at least he hasn't ghosted. When he answers the door 10 minutes later, hastily yanking a t-shirt down over his bare chest, I'm hit with the same flutter of desire I felt during our kiss, like pinpricks of electricity zipping up my spine. My lips remember his. My skin buzzes with the memory of his hands sliding up my ribs. Oh boy, this is going to be much harder than I expected. Hey, I say, because my brain is still half in the parking lot outside Malone's.
Hey.
Connor holds the door open and nods for me to enter. His roommates are either out or hiding as he leads me upstairs to his bedroom. Fuck, I'd even missed the way his room smells, like his shampoo that smells like the ocean and whatever cologne he wore Tuesday night.
Taylor, I want...
No. I stop him, holding my hand out to keep some air between us. I can't think straight when he's in my bubble. Me first.
Okay, then.
Shrugging, he takes a seat on the small love seat while I gather my nerves. I was shitty to you the other night, I say ruefully, and I'm sorry. You were right. I was embarrassed. I don't like attention, good or bad, so having a room full of people staring at me is like the fucking worst. But you only did that silly lap dance because you thought you were saving me from a much worse fate, and I didn't thank you or at least give you some credit for trying. That wasn't fair. And then with the... Somehow I don't think I can say kiss out loud without moaning. The outside stuff. I panicked. That wasn't your fault.
Well, except for when I started in with the fashion advice,
he points out with a self-deprecating smile. Yeah, no, that one was all you, jerkface. You should have known better.
Trust me, I know. I already got an earful from both Demi and Summer, friends, girlfriends,
he clarifies when he notices my blank look. You talked to your friends' girlfriends about our fight? For some reason, I'm oddly touched.
Yeah.
He shrugs adorably.
Needed someone to tell me where I fucked up. Apparently the clothing critique was a crime against your womanhood.
I snort. Connor holds up his hands in surrender.
And it wasn't even what I meant to say. My brain just short-circuited